some of these parables, these stories. This isn't necessarily a parable, but Jesus kind of turns it into a parable for us. But these stories that are recorded here, sometimes we, read them over and over again. We hear preaching from them over and over again. We may become a little desensitized to the truth of it. And I could just read a few verses, but I'm going to read the whole story, beginning with verse number 36. It's a story that we probably think of. The thing that comes to our mind the most, perhaps, would be the alabaster box. And I want us to look at what's behind the alabaster box. I'm going to read a lengthy passage. I want to ask you to stand with me this evening, but I'll begin reading with verse number 36. And one of the Pharisees desired him that he would eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and sat down to meat. Behold, a woman in the city, which was a sinner, when she knew that Jesus sat at meat in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster box of ointment, and stood at his feet behind him weeping, and began to wash his feet with tears, and did wipe them with the hairs of her head, and kissed his feet, and anointed them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee had bidden him, or which had bidden him, saw it, he spake within himself, saying, This man, if he were a prophet, would have known who and what manner of woman this is that toucheth him, for she is a sinner. And Jesus answering said unto him, Simon, I have somewhat to say unto thee. And he saith, Master, say on. There was a certain creditor which had two debtors, the one owed 500 pence, the other 50. And when they had nothing to pay, he frankly forgave them both. Tell me therefore, which of them will love him most? Simon answered and said, I suppose that he to whom he forgave most. And he said unto him, Thou hast rightly judged. And he, Jesus, turned to the woman and said unto Simon, Seest thou this woman? I entered into thine house. Thou gavest me no water for my feet, but she hath washed my feet with tears and wiped them with the hairs of her head. Thou gavest me no kiss, but this woman, since the time I came in, hath not ceased to kiss my feet. My head with oil thou didst not anoint, but this woman hath anointed my feet with ointment. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But to whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. And he said unto her, Thy sins are forgiven. Or perhaps a more literal translation in that verse right there would be, Thy sins have been forgiven. And they that sat at meat with him began to say within themselves, Who is this that forgiveth sins also? And he said unto the woman, Thy faith hath saved thee. Go in peace. You know the story, right? It's not the first time you've read it, not the first time you've heard it. Wonderful passage there. Think about the alabaster box, and perhaps you're like me, you've heard preachers really give beautiful sermons on the alabaster box. The value, the meaning, the depths. I don't want to look at the alabaster box this evening. I want to look behind it. I want to look beyond it. I want to see what is there behind the significance of. Because I believe that the story isn't so much about the alabaster box, although we can find some good things and some nuggets, really, about the alabaster box itself. But I believe the midst of the story is taking us further than just the surface here of that box. First of all, we notice that there are some offerings in the midst of this story. The first verse that I read, verse number 36, tells us about the offering of the Pharisee. The Pharisee invited him to eat. Come to his house and have a meal. We can't really speculate too much there. It seems as though, or it would appear as though, it was a full-fledged meal. And so if we were to compare it the way that we think and the way that we would have a full-fledged meal for a guest, picture it in your mind, the big spread table. I know it wasn't that way then. That's not the way that they did it. They didn't pull up a chair with their feet underneath the table. I understand all of that, but think about the big spread. And perhaps, ladies, you would be thinking about it more than what us men would be, that the time and the effort involved and the expense involved. Maybe some men would be doing part of the fixing or the helping around in the kitchen or maybe the whole. But whatever the case may be, there was quite a time element. There was quite a sacrifice to provide this big fancy meal or this well-spread meal for Jesus. The Pharisee, we don't find it anywhere that there was any kind of animosity towards Christ. It wasn't that he was trying necessarily, in our thinking, to trick Christ. He was wanting him to come and wanting to fellowship with him and maybe wanting to talk with him and perhaps even question him about some specific things. And maybe in the midst of that, being a Pharisee, there would have been some things that he would have been, you know, trying to trick him with. That's the offering that we find that comes from the Pharisee. It jumps very quickly then into the second offering that is provided. Now, this particular time, we see that this is a woman, not a man. This is a woman. She's from the city. It tells us very little about her, but there's something significant that it does tell us about her, that she is a sinner. Now, automatically, right there, with that little bit of description of this woman, we find that the two people providing the two offerings are probably considered to be from the opposite spectrum in the social classes. The Pharisee is more of the elite, the religious type, and perhaps he was somewhat wealthy, and here is this woman who is a sinner, probably not so wealthy, maybe not dirt poor, but probably not nearly as wealthy as what the Pharisee is, but yet again, she could have been very poor as well. But the significant part, the change or the difference between the two is that one is religious and one is given to us as a despicable sinner. The opposite extremes in the social classes. One of them was respected. The individual himself was respected, and the other one was looked down upon personally. If we could get into their minds this evening, which we can't, but we would like to speculate, I think that the Pharisee looked down his nose, so to speak, at the sinner, and the sinner probably cowered in the presence of the Pharisee. She may have felt some kind of humiliation, not humbleness, but humiliation in his presence because of his religious stance and because of his condescension to her. You can probably argue with me on that, and you have a right to do so. But it would just appear to me, knowing what I know about Pharisees and how they felt about sinners, that it would seem to be a very real aspect, a very probable situation that was taking place. It was probably all that this woman could do to enter into that house simply because of that Pharisee's opinion and lack of respect or disdain for her. And so we find that these two are two totally different individuals. And this woman, who is of the lower class, of the despicable sort, the disdained person, provides an offering that takes up so much of the scripture. Did you notice that? There's very little talked about here about the offering from the Pharisee, but then we find verses that are given, words expressed about this particular offering of this woman. She comes in. She recognizes Jesus. She knows who he is. She stood at his feet behind him weeping. Weeping. Now, what's that all about? Did she have a rough day? Was it something bad happened in her family? Did something tragic take place in her circumstances, in the circumstances of her life, that caused her to be emotionally disturbed here and found it easy to weep in the presence of Christ? Or was it because of the humiliation that she felt in the presence of the Pharisee? I would suggest, from the full story given to us, that the weeping came because she was in the presence of Jesus, and the holiness of Jesus was causing her sin-cursed life to feel the inadequacy and feel the pressure or feel the guilt that comes along with sin, and she was from a broken heart crying at the feet of Jesus. I think that's significant because the psalmist tells us that a broken and a contrite heart is what gets God's attention. And so Jesus is telling us here that the first part of the offering of this woman is that she stands behind him at his feet weeping. I've heard preachers go on to speculate that as she was weeping, the tears coursed down her cheek and fell dripping off onto his feet. And when she noticed it, she didn't know what else to do, so she began to take her hair and wipe the tears from his feet. Maybe it was causing further shame. I don't understand all of that, but it sure seems to. And in the midst of the emotion of it all, she began to kiss his feet. And then she anointed his feet. Jesus gives us a little bit of a parable here in the midst of this story, and he's telling it to Simon, and he says that a certain creditor has two debtors, and one of them didn't owe much, and the other one owed a lot. He forgave them both. And Simon answered correctly to the little riddle, as it were, that Jesus presented. Which one is going to love the creditor the most? And the Pharisee, Simon, said to him, it was going to be the one that was forgiven the most. He's feeling the indebtedness, not so much of the cash, the indebtedness of cash, but now the indebtedness to him because of that forgiveness that has been granted to him. Jesus goes on then to explain that this woman who was a great sinner, he knew she was a great sinner. And that was one of the things that the Pharisees struggled over in his mind. How could Jesus allow this great sinner to do what she was doing? Jesus explained she is a great sinner, but because she is forgiven so much, she loves so much. It's something for us to keep in mind, though we don't have to go out and build or develop some kind of a great sense of spiritual debt. We don't have to go into the depths of sin in order to have a great big debt before God. We have a great big debt before God just simply being humankind. Everyone born into this world is born into this world as a sinner. The same classification as this woman. All we like sheep have gone astray. There is none righteous, no, not one. So it's good for us to consistently keep in our mind, if it weren't for grace, there go I. No matter how despicable, I know it's hard for us to understand that any one of us could ever reach the depths of despicable sins that are around us, but keep in mind, if it wasn't for grace, if it wasn't for the provisions that God has given us and provided for us and the opportunities that He has given to us and provided to us and the strength or the desire or the teaching, the instruction, the upbringing, there's all kinds of things that go into providing for us. We don't have to go out and build a great big tragic list of sin so that we can be forgiven, so that we can love Him so much more. We can love Him so much more just by realizing that He saved us from sin as well as out of sin. Songwriter said, "I can ne'er repay the debt of love I owe. Here, Lord, I give myself away. 'Tis all that I can do." The woman gave her best. As a matter of fact, as you read the story, the thing about the story that doesn't come out verbatim tell us, but as you read the overtone of the story, you'll understand that what she gave in the midst of this, her offering, was not so much the tears, not so much the weeping, the wiping of the tears with her hair and the kissing of His feet and the breaking of the ointment. That's not so much the offering, but the heart was given in the midst of the offering. But the Pharisee, on the other hand, he provided a fine meal. He provided a wonderful place, accommodations, and pleasantries in the way of a meal. But he failed in the little things. Charles Childers says it this way: "It seems that Simon neglected all of the courtesies which were the custom." That kind of stands out to me. They were the customary things, and he still failed. He provided the beauty of the meal, the bounty of the meal, the blessings of the meal, but he failed in the simple customs that were ordinary. All of the courtesies which were the custom and even the delight of a thoughtful host. But the woman had anointed His feet. Simon had proven by his own treatment of his guest, and a guest towards whom he seems to have had no antagonism, that he was thoughtless and almost, if not quite, loveless. Sounds to me like maybe Charles Childers had it pretty well nailed to accuracy what was going on. That the woman, in giving of her offering and the heart of love, is expressed way beyond the values and the things of the offering. But the man that gave and failed in the seemingly insignificant customs that would have been or should have been the delight of a thoughtful host. Now let's look at the result. We've spent the majority of our time here looking at the offerings and the comparisons between the two. Now let's look at the results. Both of the gifts were accepted. It's not like Cain and Abel. It's not like that, because Cain's offering was not accepted and Abel's was. But we find that both of the offerings here were accepted. Jesus partook of the meal. He partook of the fellowship. He partook in the conversation. It's not that he rejected the Pharisee's offering. He simply accepts it, but he wants to point out the significance of the acceptance of the other offering. And realize, wanting the Pharisee to realize, that the significance of the other offering is what touched the heart of Christ more than the meal. You read the story again, look over it again. He challenges Simon, and I don't believe that he challenges him with a harshness. I don't believe that he challenges Simon with any fire coming from his eyes at all, but he challenges Simon on the little things that the woman did and the little things that he failed to do. He said, Simon, when I entered into your house, you didn't give me any water for my feet. I've been traveling for a while. My feet are dusty, probably a little bit sore, maybe a little bit achy. And a little basin of warm water would have felt comforting to my feet. But she washed my feet with something that wasn't a warm basin, but it was the best that she could provide. It was warm tears. Crying, weeping, sorrowing from a broken heart. And then she wiped them with the hairs of her head. Simon, it's customary that you would greet your guest with a kiss, but you failed to do that. In the midst of all the grandeur of your hospitality here, you did not greet your guest. But this woman, Simon, you failed to anoint my head with ointment. I don't quite get that. I don't want you, if I come to your house, I don't want you dumping a bottle of oil on me, okay? Just get that in your head. I don't want you taking my shoes off and washing my feet either. I don't want you kissing me either. But it was customary there. In these circumstances, it was customary, and she broke the box of oil. The fragrance filled the house. Simon, you didn't give me any anointing. You didn't pour out a blessing on me. Yes, Simon, she's a sinner. Her sins, which are many. Simon, I know she's a sinner. Her sins, which are many. I wonder if it pricked his heart right then. Because he's thinking in his head before this conversation began. I wonder if he were really a prophet, he would know this woman's a sinner. She's despicable. I really don't want her in my house. I don't want her anywhere near me. It might contaminate me. But he's letting this despicable person touch him. Yes, Simon, I know her sins are many. But along with her many sins, she has been forgiven because of the brokenness of her heart. The offering that she gave was more than the tears and the hair wiping his feet and the kisses and the ointment. The offering that she gave was the brokenness of her heart. Wherefore I say unto thee, her sins which are many are forgiven, for she loved much. And he turns to her and says, ma'am, your sins are forgiven. The result is that both of them received, or both of them gave their gifts, and both of their gifts were accepted in the sense of their giving. He gave a wonderful gift, but in the midst of his gift, he was schooled on what love is. Now you say, what's the take home? What is it that we can take away from this? What we can take away from this is that we don't have to have it all together. We don't have to be polished and splendid to the onlookers. What we do is to give from our heart, or to do from our heart. To allow our offering not to be something to gain the attention of people around us, but the offering that we give is from our heart, whether it's in the gift or in the doing, the providing, the being what He wants us to be. Going out to be from our heart a servant in love with Him. I believe that that's what the take home is. Giving or doing, no matter how simple or how lavish. I'm not going to say what you think I'm going to say. Giving or doing, no matter how simple or lavish, either extreme, can be nothing more than show or a pretense if it does not include the giving of the heart and life. I'm not going to say that the Pharisee was full of pretense or was wanting to have a show. But Jesus very clearly tells him, your offering's accepted, I'm enjoying myself here, but this woman has showed us what real giving is, what real doing is. Whether it's simple or whether it's lavish, it must come from the depths of our heart. Giving unto him. She went away with her sins forgiven because a broken and a contrite spirit is dearer to the heart of Christ than the calloused, self-righteous, cloaked heart of the Pharisee. What's behind the alabaster box? It's the heart. Not the cold, calculated heart, showing pretense or wanting to be praised, but simply the heart that says, oh God, I love you. May our offering come from the heart. Would you stand with me this evening?